You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 12th of July 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we return to China to consider whether the country's government can support its stock market. Despite some rallying in a volatile week, the equity market has fallen some 30% in the last month or so, a loss of around $3 trillion. We'll examine how the government has responded to these changes and consider the longer-term likelihood of ongoing problems, as well as the possibility of contagion throughout the region. Our panel of experts and analysts will answer all the key questions and explain exactly how worried about this situation we should be. We start by assessing how the Chinese government has fared in dealing with recent volatility. Does Hyde Chen, China equity strategist for the UBS Wealth Management Chief Investment Office in Hong Kong, feel that the Chinese government can support its stock market?
I think in the beginning, Chinese government, they are a little bit underestimating the power of the market, because in China, onshore equity market, I think vast majority of the, I would say, trading volume and also the participants are actually a mom and pop retail investor. So although government actually has a will and also have some of the policy tool to support the market, but I think in the beginning, they sort of didn't, full strength to actually try to support the market. And that actually only gets things worse because the retail investor, they see government came in, they hope that the government can actually turn things around. But they saw government do a lot of things and didn't actually make things better. So they actually increased, I would say, the panic level for a lot of retail investors. So that's why we see over the past few days, last week and I think also on Wednesday in particular, there's a lot of panic selling from, I think, a retail investor because they all want to get out at any cost.
Certainly, we saw some face-saving recovery in the last few days, says Angus Grigg, China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review, based in Shanghai.
I think the big thing that we've seen over the last couple of days is a lot of the margin trading, which had forced sales from margin trading, has worked through the system. And so we're seeing less forced selling today. And it does suggest that the Chinese government does have many of the levers to try and engineer a rally in the stock market. I guess the other point you've got to make, however, is that more than half the market is not trading. So while the market, the indexes have actually risen, and you could say that this probably would not have happened if all the companies were trading, particularly the smaller companies down in Shenzhen, which have seen some of the biggest rises over the last year or so.
Aside from the recent volatility, including those rallies in the past week, why have previous government efforts to support the stock market been less than successful? Isabel Hilton is the editor of China Dialogue.
This was a bubble, and this was a bubble that has been going on for about a year. The government is pretty much responsible for the bubble because it had state media announce that there would be a great bull run and then relaxed the conditions of trading. It allowed people to open multiple accounts. It allowed people to bet their houses, you know, to use their houses as collateral for trading in shares. And this meant that a whole bunch of small traders piled in because there are relatively few places in China where you can invest. You know, people have invested in property. That's not doing well at all now. So people really piled in. And a lot of them thought this was a kind of magic trick because the government was behind it. Now, those people are losing now, and they're losing often money that they've borrowed against other assets. So you can see that there could be a kind of snowball effect here, which the government has, you know, clearly an economic interest in preventing, but it's also got its prestige on the line. Their problem is that this market has to correct. You know, this market is way overvalued, and you can throw all you like at it, but actually investors know it's overvalued. And as soon as these restrictions are relaxed, people will sell again. It will come down.
Wenji Liu, who covers China equity strategy at UBS, explains that the Chinese government faces a dilemma.
The Asian market, in terms of its valuation, it's still bubbly. But without any rescue, it could start to sink further and even jeopardize the soundness of the whole financial system. So government intervention, the timing is actually very difficult to pick. And it's indeed a very difficult task for the Chinese government.
So what exactly does Angus Grigg identify as the problems that the government has recently encountered, given its previously robust record at micromanaging the economy?
The Chinese government has been very good at managing the economy over the last two decades, really, and they've shown themselves to be excellent economic managers. I think the problem here is that the stock market is a lot harder to control than, say, the housing market or, you know, the broader property market. So the real issue is that they allowed so much margin lending, this huge rise in margin lending, which was up something like 150%. And this was really poison for the market, because as soon as the market starts to fall, you see all these margin calls come through and people are forced to sell. And that triggers a sort of rebound loop or a feedback loop, if you like, and where you see really panic selling. So stocks just start to fall and fall and fall, and that's very, very hard to contain. So if they have indeed worked some of this margin lending out of the market, they can probably engineer a rally in the short term, but you'd think over the next sort of 3 to 6 months, the market's probably got a little bit more to fall.
How worried should we be then, despite the recent pickup? UBS's Hyde Chen explains.
There's a few key indicators to watch in the next few days. The first one is there's a margin financing balance, because as I say, there's a lot of retail investor participation in the onshore China market, and lots of people, they actually borrow money, which is using margin financing to buy the share. So of course, when there's a stock price fall, they got a margin call, they need to put in more money, otherwise they will be forced to liquidate their shareholding. And that's also, I would say, part of the reason that we see market has been dropping for the last 2-3 weeks. But on the other hand, we see the margin financing balance actually came down pretty quickly over the past week or so. I mean, if this can continue to unwind, which means that people are sort of unwind their highly leveraged position, this will be a positive sign for the market. Another thing to watch is that there is still, I think, more than half of the company that list in both Shanghai and Shenzhen Stock Exchange, their trading has been suspended. Actually, it's the company that they applied for voluntary share suspension, because many company and some of the major shareholders, they pledge their share for some either company or maybe personal financing purpose. And if the share price continue to drop, they also face a margin call. So the margin call, this kind of risk, is not only for retail investors. Some of the company or major shareholder, they're also facing similar kind of pressure.
Wenji Lu provides an insight for the international investor.
For international investors, the visibility of Chinese stock market outlook is much lower now, because just as I said, the government intervened in the market when the PE ratio is still around 20 times for the overall market. What happened when the government support stops? And the Asian market right now is rebounding very sharply. The investors which previously make some losses from margin financing are now borrowing again. So how come the market leverage further rises and the asset bubble just further inflates? So these are just open questions which worries the international investors.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the chances of contagion spreading throughout the region. The fall that we've seen has largely been in domestic equities rather than the internationally traded variety. Should we be concerned that the slump could continue to spill over into the globally traded MSCI China stocks? Angus Grigg again.
The Chinese stock market is overwhelmingly a domestic story. I think the foreign money in the Chinese stock market is nothing more than about 3-4%. So really it is a Chinese story here. So we have seen some selling in Hong Kong, we've seen some selling in Japan, we've seen some selling in Australia, but I think the contagion on global markets is probably containable because it's very much a China story here. The risk is, however, that we start to see the liquidation of quality assets to pay for margin calls here in China. And we saw that manifest itself in the last couple of days in the big falls in commodity prices, where there were suggestions that people were dumping cargoes of iron ore or copper or what have you in order to try and meet margin calls from banks and things. So the contagion is a threat, and that is a very scary prospect if we were to see further falls in commodity prices or indeed people trying to liquidate properties here in China to try and cover margin calls. But at this stage, I would say the contagion looks to have been fairly well contained.
Wenji Lu, meanwhile, finds reason for confidence on this front.
I actually think the Asia market is much safer than the Asia. The reason is that before this round of market correction, the Asia market originally priced in very little so-called long-term uncertainties. For example, the sexy stories about the Internet Plus theme, like also some other themes like SOE reform or One Road, One Belt strategy. These are good themes, but how much it contributes to corporate profits is very uncertain. These stories have been very hot in Asia markets, but relatively just little reflected in the H-share prices. So I actually think the H-share bubble is much smaller, and at this level, H-share market has limited downside risk.
Hai Chen explains that we have already seen the slump spilling over into globally traded MSCI China stocks. Could this be set to continue, in his view?
We actually already saw that Monday and also to Wednesday. Monday, Tuesday, they dropped around 6% together. And on Wednesday, the MSCI China, which is an offshore listed Chinese company in Hong Kong, they dropped around 6%. I think this is some of the spillover effect from some of, I think, the liquidity issue I just mentioned. Say, if you're an investor, you want to cut your exposure in China, but there's a limited liquidity you can get from onshore because company, they take their share off the exchange. So the only venue you can find liquidity is in Hong Kong. That's why we see a lot of selling as well.
So just how much of a threat is this volatility to the economy? It's more about the impact on growth, says Isabel Hilton.
It's whether you get a snowball effect at this point and a matter of confidence. Now, the government has pretty deep pockets and they will, as you've seen this week, they are prepared to throw a great deal at trying to avoid a bigger crisis. And I think that in terms of things like local government debt, in the end, they've cleaned up the banks already three times without cleaning up the system, so the problem recurs. They can still afford to do that. So I don't think that we're looking at a collapse. We're looking at a lot of hurt people. And we're looking at an impact on growth, which was already suffering. And again, that's maybe a slow burn politically, but it's still a problem.
The overall impact should be fairly small, according to Wenji Liu.
First, the impact on the overall economy should be small, given that at this stage, the financial institutions, banks, brokers, trust companies, there's no major financial institutions face the bankruptcy issue. And it seems like they could still stay solvent with the government support. But the impact on short-term discretionary consumption should be quite visible. For example, the auto sales actually recorded negative growth in June. It's unprecedented for many, many years. The reason is that many stock investors previously delayed the purchase of automobile to buy stocks. For example, one guy wanted to buy a VW car and he played stocks for several months and tried to buy a BMW. The problem is that the money to buy VW is now lost in the stock market. So he has to kind of delay the auto purchase forever, not at least for the next 1 year or so. So such discretionary items will be hit, I think, in the next few quarters.
What does all this mean, if anything, for the rest of the region? Is there a risk of so-called contagion? Hai Chen doesn't perceive a high risk of this.
We don't think this will cause, I would say, more regional outside of the China and Hong Kong. Other markets will follow because China onshore, I think at the moment, they are still quite isolated from other markets. China haven't fully opened their capital market. There's only limited channel for the onshore investor to invest overseas. And on the other hand, there's only limited channel for international investors to put the money into China. I guess this is probably some of the, not the silver lining, but some of the upside for this because there's a limited correlation or also limited connection for the onshore Chinese market. So we don't think there will be like a large contagions to other, I would say, equity market, probably besides Hong Kong.
Isabel Hilton, on the other hand, sounds a more cautionary note when it comes to the potential knock-on impact of this volatility.
China is the biggest trade partner of all of them. And, you know, the Chinese economy sneezing, it really is everyone else catching a cold at this point. Not just in the region, but further afield.
It is the impact on currency, says Wenji Liu, that needs to be monitored.
If the Asia market volatility has big impact on the currency, I think then the regional market will be affected in a more significant way. But for now, I think the government still has a very strong control on the capital exodus, and the currency exchange rate keeps quite stable. So I don't actually see significant spillover to other countries in the region.
According to Angus Grigg in Shanghai, the big risk is that the falls in the Chinese stock market start to translate into weakness in the real economy in China. Falls in consumption, for example, could have a big impact region-wide.
That could have a very big impact across the region if we started, for example, to see less outbound tourists, less demand for goods here in China. And that is probably the big risk for the region, indeed the global economy now, if there is a subsequent income shock here in China as a result of the share market, and that starts to translate into reduced Chinese buying power from everything from Swiss watches to Sydney property and, I guess, you know, luxury handbags.
Here with a closing thought from Hong Kong is Wenji Liu, who has this program's regular client view. Wenji identifies a split in risk appetite.
In local Asia markets, some investors actually become more aggressive. These are basically punters which want to recover their early losses with the government support measures. So right now they are even adding leverage, trying to bet on the rally. But in the Asia market, investors' risk appetite has reduced. Most institutions just become more prudent on the long-term uncertainties, the themes, and just focus on the visible corporate financial indicators. So I think there will be a split of risk appetite going forward as well.
And that's Wenji Liu bringing us to the end of this 40th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.